Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
U.S. regulators opened an investigation into Tesla over crashes and deaths tied to its autopilot software, and how states across the country are taking a hawkish stance against China.
We can see across the U.S. that national security is becoming a much bigger priority, and we're also seeing that at the state level.
Plus, the Biden administration shelves its plan to ban menthol cigarettes after weighing the political risk of angering some black voters. It's Friday, April 26th. I'm Pierre Bien-Aimé for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The Federal Communications Commission voted this week to take a more active role defending internet infrastructure from online threats like ransomware and state-sponsored hacks. The U.S. agency could create regulations or at least encourage better private sector practices. Telecom reporter Drew Fitzgerald joins me now. Drew, what's the FCC aiming to achieve?
With this, what the FCC is trying to do is play a more active role in protecting networks that are considered especially sensitive against potential disruption or hacking. And what they're really eyeing with a lot of these new rules and authorities is trying to monitor U.S. network operators to make sure that they don't have any weaknesses that foreign spies could use to collect intelligence, for example. And also, they are trying to play a more aggressive role in revoking licenses and restricting the ability of, for instance, Chinese telecom companies that already do business in the U.S. They're trying to rein in what some of those sanctioned companies are able to do as they interact with U.S. telecom companies. All of this is really trying to go toward the same goal that a lot of other federal agencies already work toward, which is defending U.S. networks.
And the FCC's new remit, how does it work?
Well, it's a long, drawn-out regulatory process, but once the rules are in effect, and if there are no court challenges that successfully stay these provisions, the FCC will have a new legal basis with which to write new rules that could do things like require stricter disclosures of outages, could require companies to share more information about when there are bugs or vulnerabilities and weaknesses in their networks that state-sponsored actors like China or Russia could use to exploit for spying or disruption. They'll be using this new legal authority to really stiffen up their ability to take a more active role in the cybersecurity space.
That was Wall Street Journal telecom reporter Drew Fitzgerald. U.S. federal auto safety regulators have opened an investigation into the adequacy of Tesla's recall last year of 2 million vehicles equipped with autopilot software. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said in a report today that they uncovered a trend of, quote, avoidable crashes involving hazards that would have been visible to an attentive driver. In all, the regulator said it identified 467 crashes involving autopilot and tied the technology to at least 14 deaths. The new probe also marks an escalation of the regulator's long-running scrutiny of the technology, which it had been investigating for nearly 3 years after numerous high-profile crashes, including ones that killed drivers. Tesla didn't respond to a request for comment. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Chinese leader Xi Jinping today. After the meeting, Blinken alluded to economic sanctions under consideration by the Biden administration. That's if China doesn't stop its support for Moscow's defense industry, which helps Russia sustain its assault on Ukraine. As Blinken met with Chinese leaders, a spokesman for the country's foreign ministry called U.S. pressure tactics, quote, extremely hypocritical and irresponsible. U.S. officials say China has provided Moscow with microelectronics, drone engines, and other materials that, while not lethal weaponry, have still boosted Russia's military industry. It's also helped Russia improve its satellite capabilities for use in the war in Ukraine. Coming up, the U.S. may be sending a tough message China's way, but so are individual states and cities. That's after the break.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
U.S. states have a new adversary, China. From Florida to Indiana and Montana, a growing list of local proposals, laws, and regulations are aimed at blocking Chinese individuals and companies from working on research, acquiring land, setting up factories, and otherwise participating in the American economy. Our China-focused correspondent, James Arity, joins me now. Hello, James.
Hello.
So why are states taking this into their own hands versus following the federal government's lead?
State legislators are telling me that they're frustrated with Congress, that they don't feel that Congress is moving fast enough to counter China. We can see across the U.S. that national security is becoming a much bigger priority, and we're also seeing that at the state level. And it is unusual to see them asserting national security with some of the rules that they're making. You think of the states and even municipalities as dealing with their local issues, which are creating jobs, drawing investment. But in this case, they're saying that China is posing a national security risk in their backyard and they want to stop it.
And what kinds of issues are they really hoping to address? What do they blame China for?
One of the big concerns is land. They feel that China is becoming aggressive in terms of buying farmland, and they don't like it. They cite food security as a concern.
So who's been introducing these kinds of bills?
So in the city of Grand Forks, North Dakota, a Chinese company called Fufeng wanted to build a corn milling plant. The city council worried about a Air Force base down the road from where the Fufeng plant was going to be. And they decided that this was a national security concern that was not addressed by the federal government and that they needed to stop the project. So initially, state officials and local officials were very excited about this project, which was going to create 1,000 jobs and draw in $700 million of investment to Grand Forks, possibly their biggest private sector investment ever. But in the end, local residents started to rally against this plant, and the city council canceled all the permitting for the plant, so it couldn't go ahead. There are many cases around the country where new legislation has come in or rulemaking by local governments has started that counters China, and it pushes away job opportunities and cancels investment, big investment plans in some cases.
Now, what about the high-profile example of TikTok? Just this week, President Biden signed a bill to force the company's sale by its Chinese owner, ByteDance. But many states were ahead of the game in targeting TikTok.
The majority of states have introduced some kind of legislation or some kind of rule. They have run the gamut from not allowing TikTok to be used on devices, phones that are basically of state employees, to an effort in Montana to block TikTok outright. Now, a judge stopped Montana's effort, so that didn't go ahead. But the big point here is the states had been moving much earlier and in some cases more aggressively than the federal government.
What are detractors of these kinds of initiatives saying?
In some cases, the efforts are seen as racist. They can be seen as just political grandstanding. The profile of the states that are challenging China is deep red. These are moving through Republican-controlled states and, in some cases, moving very, very smoothly through the legislative process with almost no one voting against some of the bills. And so there hasn't been enough debate in some instances on what the ramifications of these bills might be. There's been complaints on many levels.
That was the Wall Street Journal's China-focused correspondent, James Arity. The Biden administration is reversing course on its plan to ban menthol cigarettes. The White House weighed the potential public health benefits of banning minty smokes against the political risk of angering some black voters in an election year. The administration said it's delaying a decision on whether to impose a ban, contending that it needs more time to consult with outside groups on the matter. There is no timeline for the administration to revisit the decision as President Biden competes with former President Trump for votes in November. Menthols account for more than a third of all cigarettes sold in the U.S. and are predominantly used by black and Hispanic smokers. And Paramount Global is considering replacing its chief executive, Bob Bakish, and installing a committee of top executives to run the company on an interim basis. That's according to people familiar with the situation. The stunning move would come as the company explores a sale. Paramount is in exclusive merger talks with Skydance Media. Board members have soured on Bakish's leadership, questioning whether he was aggressive enough in pursuing strategic opportunities for the company. Paramount's brands include CBS, MTV, Nickelodeon, and the Paramount Film Studio. Its market value has fallen from $25.3 billion in 2019 to $8.4 billion now. And finally, happy Friday. If you're at the office today, maybe you've got some license to dress a little more casually and skip the necktie. And it seems the tie is loosening its hold in general, not just on Fridays. According to the Observatory of Economic Complexity, a website tracking international trade data, the tie market grew to $534 million in exports in 2022, but is still below pre-pandemic levels. Despite that, our men's fashion columnist Jacob Gallagher says ties are here to stay, in part thanks to their changing appeal.
To be sure, tie sales are down. They are still below pre-COVID levels. But for a cohort of particularly young men and women, notably, that are interested in fashion, that might want to make more of a statement with what they're wearing, they are gravitating toward ties as a kind of anti-establishment thing. You talk to some tie makers and they're saying, listen, we're not going to be at the levels that we were the 10 years before COVID, but we are seeing this minor uptick that's driven by kind of a younger consumer, a more fashion-forward consumer.
And I happen to be wearing a tie today, but honestly, it's an exception. And that's what's news for this week. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi. What's News This Week was hosted by Luke Vargas, Sabrina Siddiqui, and myself, Pierre Bien-Aimé. Additional support this week from Tali Arbel. Michael Laval wrote our theme music. Our supervising producers are Sandra Kilhoff and Michael Cosmides. Aisha El-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley are our deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. Tomorrow, you can look out for our weekly markets wrap-up, What's News in Markets. Then on Sunday, we'll be answering your questions about how the U.S.-China trade fight might affect you, your business, and the broader economy in What's News Sunday. We'll be back with our regular show on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.